First time in this room. Good afternoon. I call this meeting of the Job Growth, Energy, Affordability, Policy, and Finance Committee to order. Today is Tuesday, February 7th. First order of business is approval of the minutes. Representative Baker moves approval of the minutes dated February 2nd. Are there any corrections, changes, additions? Seeing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say nay. Motion prevails. The minutes are adopted. Members, the first bill on the agenda for today is House File 369. It's Representative Teisseyre. The chair will move House File 369 be recommended to pass and refer to the Committee on Ways and Means. And Representative Tice, my understanding is that that we are getting some revisions to the properly posted amendment. Is that correct? Or maybe you don't even know. We're just waiting for the amendment to show up. So we're going to have the bill as it is before you, and then we will take up the amendment once it's brought here and distributed to members of the committee. So,
Representative Tice,
is this your first time to this committee?
No.
Okay.
What? I thought you'd remember me.
Okay. I was just trying to figure out. We have a standing rule that your first time before the committee, you get to bring treats. I'm just wondering. I didn't see any treats.
It's not my first time.
So, okay. Welcome to the committee. Please proceed with your testimony and presentation. And again, as soon as we get that amendment, the chair will move that amendment and we'll adopt it. Before you start, I want to see, is my guest still here? No. My sister was here today. So I wanted to introduce her to everyone. So, okay. All right. Representative Tice.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Today, we are just a part of a very special day because what we are going to do is give folks in the state of Minnesota the opportunity that maybe sometimes they struggle with different parts of their life, but now they get to be like everybody else and get jobs and do wonderful things. I'm not going to say a whole lot because I think the testifiers and the bill does all the talking by itself. So rather than listen to me, I am going to introduce to you Kara Ruff, who will tell you more about independent lifestyles.
Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you. I'm Kara Ruff. I am the Executive Director of Independent Lifestyles in Sauk Rapids, and I'm also the Legislative Liaison for the Minnesota Association of Centers for Independent Living. Chairman Grafflo and members, I want to thank you for hearing us today. As you know, there are 8 Centers for Independent Living in Minnesota, and we provide a wide range of services to people of all disabilities and all ages. Services range from independent living skills training, accessibility, personal care attendant services, advocacy, information and referral, nursing home relocation, transition, representative payee, social and support groups, and much, much more. Many people with all types of disabilities face extreme isolation, discrimination, rejection, and trouble being treated with dignity in our society. They're often taken advantage of because they have not been taught to advocate for themselves or that they're equal members of society. They have to live in poverty, try to manage benefits they don't understand, struggle to find accessible, affordable housing, and battle to overcome extreme stigma and work and recreate in mainstream society. Centers for Independent Living help people of all disabilities with all of those issues and more. Each year we serve thousands, including many veterans with disabilities, who without our services and support would be homeless, destitute, confined to nursing homes and other high-priced institutions against their will. For many, it means the difference between surviving to actually having a quality and choice-driven lifestyle. Each Center for Independent Living across the state has a very large service area ranging from 9 to 12 counties. All of the centers are presented with unique challenges with their regions, which involve both geography and intensive populations. However, we do bring personalized consumer-driven services from the metro area into the farthest underserved areas in Minnesota. We desperately need additional funding to be able to provide these services. I know that when you as a citizen, or especially as a legislator, you want to see a return on your investment. One of the reasons I'm so proud to represent the Centers for Independent Living is our strong return on investment. As you'll see on the back of our handout, just last year alone, we relocated 61 individuals from nursing homes, which saved taxpayers almost $6 million per year. Our services also prevented or diverted over 1,000 individuals from nursing homes or higher cost institutions. If we took just 25% of that, that would be an additional cost savings of almost $25 million per year in Medicaid dollars. I spent the last 20 years of my career leading a Center for Independent Living for the simple fact that it truly works. It truly changes people's lives like no other service model I've ever encountered. Not only do we pride ourselves on our services, but the way in which we run. We insist that people with disabilities are the ones that govern our services by 51% on both our staff and our boards. We pride ourselves on being accountable. We're accountable for every hour of service and every outcome we achieve. We also pride ourselves on being accountable to you, those who make investments in us. You have our accountability handout before you. With your generous investment of $1 million in one-time funding last year, you can see that we were able to achieve incredible things across the state as outlined region by region. With ongoing funding, we can increase our staff base so that we can get to the people and veterans across Minnesota who are desperately waiting for our services. We need to be able to fully service the entire state. As you hear the following testimonies, I'm sure you will agree there is nothing that feels more despondent than having to tell people we can't serve them because we don't have enough funding. We come before you today not for a handout, but as part of the solution. Centers for Independent Living are what works, produces results, provides accountability, and empowers people to live as independently as possible with dignity, choice, and a staggering cost savings to the state of Minnesota. Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members, for recognizing our extreme value in recognizing the unparalleled results for people and veterans in Minnesota. We thank you for your generosity, your continued outstanding support, for which we are deeply grateful.
Thank you very much for your testimony, and thank you again for all the work that you do. And I'm proud of the fact that last year, on a bipartisan basis, bicameral basis, we were able to provide you those additional resources. And before we move on to additional testimony, Representative Tice, what I want to do is I want to move the A1 amendment now.
Okay.
So, members, we have the House File 369 in front of us, and the chair will move the A1 amendment. And just to explain to members what this does, just to provide an elaborate, what this does is it increases the base appropriation for fiscal years 18 and 19 by $250,000 each year. I'm sorry, I saw the $500,000 and I was confused. So that's what it does. In addition, in the second session, remember earlier this year we heard about a program called Resource Incorporated. This would appropriate their base funding amount for fiscal year 18 and 19. And contains it in one bill. So is there any questions about the amendment before we move it? Representative Sundin.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Can you refresh my memory on Resource Inc.? If they serve several different facilities, or just exactly what do they do?
Is there anyone here from Resource Inc.? So I'll say one, probably better if we take some brief testimony on this. I'm sorry, Representative Tice, I just want to make sure that members understand it. So if you could just come up and refresh Representative Sundin's remarks on it, and then the chair will add some comments to it. And welcome to the committee again. Please state your name for the record so 100 years from now we know who you are.
Thank you, Chair Garofalo, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Kelly Matter. I'm the president and CEO of Resource Inc., and I am back to thank this committee for the direct appropriation that we received in 2015 of $500,000 per year for 2 years. We are a 55-year-old organization. We provide chemical and mental health treatment, career education, programming with and for business partners, and employment services. We serve about 20,000 Minnesotans every year in 17 different counties. We serve people that experience multiple barriers to employment and education success, people who have experienced long-term joblessness, homelessness, trauma, chemical mental health barriers, and other barriers to employment and success. Would you like me to talk further about outcomes, or do you want us to be very brief?
You did give a presentation to the committee, so I just was thinking that maybe perhaps we could. I think Representative Sundin is nodding his head in an affirmative fashion that now he remembers. We have a lot of information and a lot of committee hearings, so I think the relevant portion for members of the committee is this is the base funding amount for Resource Inc. That is contained, so there's no net increase or decrease based off of base funding.
Correct.
Any additional discussion on the A1 amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say nay. Motion prevails. The A1 amendment is adopted. Representative Tice, back to your bill. and any presenters that you may have for it.
We've got a couple more that would love to come up and testify, sure. Mr. Chair.
Good afternoon. Welcome to the committee.
Hi.
Please state your name for the record and then proceed with your testimony.
I'm Mary Winkleman. I'm honored to be here today to tell you a story. Once upon a time, there lived a beautiful, talented, intelligent, gifted princess named Mary Elizabeth Agnes Simran Decker Vogel Winkleman, but she likes to be called Mary Beth. This princess is a person with disabilities. With just a glance, one won't see my disabilities, but they are unseen. Some of my disabilities include attention deficit disorder, attention deficit hyperactive disorder, or ADHD, Asperger's, depression, anxiety, and psychosocial disabilities. Sorry, my... I also have a physical disability of weak ligaments, which can sometimes cause some walking difficulties. I have been working with the Independent Lifestyles, a center for independent living, since October 2015.
And Mary Beth, you should know that you're doing a better job presenting than most of the legislators up here.
you're doing
just great, so don't worry about it. Please continue.
Having my disabilities made life hard from the start. Being the only special needs student in my grade school was extremely hard. I was the target of constant bullying, and I was always left out of social gatherings. Life was beyond difficult and very lonely. My family helped, and I powered my way through the criticisms to become a stronger person. In fifth grade, I began to spend my days in two different schools, part of the time at a private school, the other at a public school, where I received extra support with my language arts, and I attended my first special needs class. It was challenging to be in two schools, but rewarding as it opened my world to more people. For my seventh and eighth grade years, I went to a public school, and I was in a program called Read 180, which focuses on reading, writing, and spelling. Thanks to this program, I went from a first grade reading level to a seventh grade at the beginning of my eighth grade year. I even attended a mainstream language arts class for one trimester. I continued to attend special needs classes in high school, only not as much as I did in the past, but I still needed the extra support. At a point in my high school education, I was able to go without a paraprofessional in a classroom. This helped me to become part of the mainstream class and not stand out as a different person. After I walked at my graduation, I continued to attend an after-school program that allows special needs students to continue with their lessons. This program is called Community Options 2, or CO2. Which is for students who are the age of 18 to 21, and it allows the students to get firsthand work experience. From there, I was introduced to the vocational work program, which allied me with my independent living specialist, Pam, who first started helping me by working on relationships, financial management, and transportation. Pam pointed out something as we worked on the financial piece that I was really good with numbers. As our relationship grew, so did my goals. We moved towards working on developing pre-employment skills, writing a resume, and developing professional references, as well as working on professional relationships and presentations. The entire time together, self-advocacy was always discussed and focused on as a goal. As we worked, she told me point blank that I needed to get a driver's license. It was scary for me, and I didn't scary for me, but taking small steps and building up my comfort level made me believe I could try. With her support, I am now a proud licensed driver with my own vehicle. Being direct, Pam shared with me the importance of self-care for social and professional relationships, but most importantly for my long-term well-being and good health. She constantly was pointing out how fantastic I am and how wonderfully unique I am. She was right. She made me see that fantastic and unique are assets to be proud of and to be shared. With her constant probing and questioning, I realized I have so much to give and offer. Good with numbers, you bet. With support, I completed my first semester, and I am now on my second semester at college in the accounting program. Pam walked me through the entire college process, even assessing me with applying for and getting a scholarship. She continued to be direct, telling me how to step up by requiring me to be neat and organized on my assignments, maintaining a detailed calendar, and professionally communicating with my instructors and vocal rehab counselors. Getting B's in my classes are okay, but I push myself because I can and I do get A's. She is tough on me, encouraging me to set the bar higher, reaching for it and obtaining it. I have learned organization skills, study habits, and the secrets of constant follow through. I am thrilled to share with you my most recent achievement. I'm a proud Dean's List member with a GPA of 3.81. My independent living specialist have always focused on today, but she has taught me to focus on all my tomorrows and plan ahead. She helped show me to be more confident, self-assured, and strong. She pointed me in the right direction with clear instructions on how I can achieve the goals I have set in my career plans, in school, and in life. She helped bring out the very best in me for my family, my friends, my community, and most importantly, myself. I am a success and will continue to be successful in all aspects of my life. I'm grateful to be here today. My story is moving forward day by day, week by week. I am working for my happily ever after. You can start a success story for so many other people with disabilities. Please support and advocate for more funding for the Center for Independent Living. My life has been changed dramatically from the support I have received. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony. And you should know that when I was in school, my GPA was also 3.81, but it was the numbers were in a different order. So thank you very much. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
My name is Mike Mills, and I'm retired from the Minnesota National Guard. I served in Iraq in 2005 when my truck was blown up by an IED. And I sustained third-degree deep tissue burns to 31% of my body, mainly my left side. I lost my pinky, my thumb, half my ring finger, my ear, my nose, plus the burn scars I have. I broke my foot, shattered my hip, broke my shoulder. I have PTSD and TBI. After I left the hospital and returned home, I didn't want to go out anywhere. I was embarrassed and people would stare at me. And I felt that they were making fun of me, missing my nose and everything else. And I wasn't the man I was when I went to Iraq. And I felt like my life was over. Due to the fact that Centers for Independent Living hire 51% of people with disabilities, including many veterans, Independent Lifestyles did extensive outreach to find a veteran who could work with disabled vets. And that's when they found me. I started as a peer mentor, helping others cope with their disabilities and to find their place in the community and society again. From there, I was promoted to Independent Living Specialist, and over the past 5 years, I have been able to work with many people with all kinds of disabilities. I have helped them go from homeless and helpless to having a home and finding their voice. I have helped them get jobs, understand their resources, improve their relationships, learn how to advocate for themselves, and how to live on their own. I've also been instrumental in setting up the Veterans Protocol in St. Cloud. It's the Veterans Court in St. Cloud. We have also other staff who work with this. This is a court program for veterans who need help once they are released to get back to their model, to get back on their feet and cope with issues that they've stemmed from their service. I serve as a role model and mentor and ensure they have connected with the appropriate community resources, stay on track, and able to live independently. Centers for Independent Living believes that people with disabilities are equal members of our society, and that is these opportunities for assistance, help, growth, and support the change their lives of others permanently. In my work at Centers for Independent Living, I have taught people with disabilities and veterans with disabilities by leading by example that a disability does not define who they are. I have taught them they can achieve a life in which they can make their own choices and have the right to live how and where they choose. In the past year, Kara Ruff nominated me for the Veterans Voice Award. It was presented to me last September 11th at St. Thomas. And it was my honor to be in service of others to be an example of what people with disabilities can achieve. I'm grateful for how independent lifestyles has impacted me in my life and given me the opportunity to be the light of others struggling as I once did. Please support us so that we can continue changing and improving the lives of people who need it the most.
Thank you very much. Representative Tice, does that complete your presentation, or do you have any other testifiers?
I think we're good. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Hi, my name is Carol LaFleur, and it's very extremely important that I speak today, so I'm so happy you're going to allow me to do so. There's a couple in the room that know me in the room, and I'm smiling at you, but most of you do not. What you don't know, again, my name is Carol LaFleur, and you will know me when I leave here today, and I hope you remember that, is growing up, I lived a tattered life, torn life. My house was blown up. The schools didn't care about me. I became an addict on the street. I was an alcoholic and a drug addict. I was homeless. I endured domestic violence. As a young adult in high school, I was one on the steps smoking marijuana and didn't give a care about my life, and I attempted suicide. My life continued down this tragic path, and it was tragic, but mental health wasn't diagnosed or dealt with at that time for me. I ended up in a domestic violence relationship to the point that he would let me on fire. But I also became anorexic bulimic and couldn't eat foods because I let the alcohol and drug addiction go behind. Eventually, in 1990, I ended up being put into many hospitals in the state of Minnesota. I ended up in 1 year in Wilmer, 1 year in Anoka, almost a year in North Memorial, Fairview Riverside, Hennepin County, two different nursing homes, and eventually a group home. So for 7 years, from 1990 to 97, you is our legislatures, House of Representatives, our community members, our taxpayers, paid for me to be in facilities that didn't give a crap if I lived or died. They cared about the fact that, oh, you're disabled, but that's all you are as a disabled person. Eventually, in January 21st, 1997, after patients being abused at an Oak Regional Treatment Center, state representative at that time, Bill Haas, came there and rescued us. However, I was released back to my home. Being released back to my home, I still didn't have to have the tools to deal with society. Remember, I was that throwaway that schools didn't care about, community didn't care about, nobody cared about. So I went home and became homebound, agoraphobic, for over 9 years, unable to leave one bedroom in my home. I was assigned a mental health case manager. And I was like, what are you going to do for me? Nobody else gave a crap about me. Why would you care? Eventually, he assigned me a PCA. And the first beginning of the PCA, they were really good. They came into my bedroom, which I didn't have to leave. They brought me whatever food I might attempt to eat. But I was in a wheelchair full time. I was 69 pounds. And the hospital said, she'll die. That's going to happen to her. And they wanted to make that happen, too, in my eyes, because they catered to all the things that were going on. They weren't doing anything to make me independent or make me any better. I didn't know at that time that's what I needed or that's who I wanted to be, because really, I didn't care. Eventually, though, I got changed from that PCA company to Metropolitan Center for Independent Living. And I am forever thankful for their staff, their faculty, and in the front row is my PCA that I had for many years, Amanda Kappas. And I'm thankful because in 2005, she had been working with me a couple of years. She persuaded me to leave my home. And what did I leave my home for? For an education that I was told I was too stupid to get. I attended North Hennepin Community College in a wheelchair full-time. I changed my degree a couple times. But at the same time, I started finding out I had something to give back. Somebody said, write your story down. I said, why does my story matter? I don't matter to anybody. But found out that my story helped a professor change her life and get out of a domestic violence relationship. While going to North Hennepin, I became part of the Student Senate, part of other organizations, but then I started giving back to my community, to kids that went through things that I went through. So all the time I went through school, I did this, I graduated. Then somebody said, well, are you going to go on for your bachelor's? What the heck is a bachelor's? I didn't even know what an AA was. I really didn't. So I attended, I got accepted to Metropolitan State University Law School, Law Enforcement, and Criminal Justice. Now, let those words ring in your head, because this is the drug addict, the alcoholic, the anorexic, bulimic, the 7 years in the hospital. By the way, how many hundreds of thousands of dollars you spent that did no good then, but the MCIL did help a lot, because I'm alive because of them. So I attended Metropolitan State School of Law Enforcement and Criminal Justice, focusing on criminal justice, knowing that I wanted to go in that field to help others to make a difference in their lives. Not only did I graduate, but I graduated with a 3.91 GPA and class valedictorian, something that I was told was absolutely impossible. But because of Metropolitan Center Independent Living, they had to focus on disabilities to have funding, which is extremely important in this room, but they like to focus on the ability we have to be successful in the community and have independent living skills. Right? So, and I'm thinking, cool, I graduated, now what do I do? Well, my staff member over there, remember I was in that wheelchair? She slowly started leaving it behind. You can't leave that. I'd have panic and anxiety attacks. Eventually, obviously, you see, and I walked in this room. No wheelchair. Obviously, I'm not anorexic bulimic. Since I've been with Metropolitan Center for Independent Living, now I want you to document this because 1990, 1997, 7 years, let's look at those records, how much money that cost. I have not had one mental health hospital stay. How much has that saved us? But look at my self-esteem and who I am today because of the services that they render. And the staff work with you, and they care about you as a human being. It's just important because now my family will be more successful because I am more successful. Out of that, I continue to volunteer. I received numerous awards for my volunteerism. In fact, the deputy chief of the city of Brooklyn Park added up the hours I volunteer, and he said, Carol, it's about $64,000 a year the time you're giving. But I still wanted a paycheck. $872 a month with Social Security wasn't cutting it to pay the rent, guys. So eventually, 2 years ago, I applied to be an urban scholar for Metropolitan Council with the assistance of my staff and my faculty. I mean, my staff and Metropolitan Center for Independent Living supported me in saying, you know, you can do this. I applied. I was chosen. Out of 400 applicants, they chose 11 urban scholars, and I was chosen. And they didn't see me, so they chose me from my application, so they weren't pitying me. I worked there in Metro Mobility for three months. And after the 3 months working in there, I knew they do a juvenile diversion program, and I reached out to the chair, Brian Lamb, and asked him if that's a possibility. He extended my internship. It is in May this year. I've been there 2 years, and I work for Metropolitan Council. I work for Office of Equal Opportunity, but I also work for Metro Transit Police Department, Community Outreach, Community Engagement with our Native American community, which I am Native American. And I focus on other areas of employment and bringing in people that have disabilities but have abilities to work. I work on that as well. So I pay taxes. I pay for my medical. I pay for my housing. I pay for things that make me feel good. It's not always easy. I'm not going to tell you that. It's a struggle sometimes. But I've gained employment, and I hadn't worked for 25 years. And in the last 2 years, I haven't driven in 25 years, but 2 years ago, due to the assistance of my staff, guess who drives to and from work? I do. And prior to the 2 years, I was getting 9 hours of PCA a day. Now I only get 2 hours.
2 hours. So you spent all that money that wasn't being successful in the hospitals, but I got into my home, and from their support, my staff support, I am successful. And I think that's really important, because when we put dollars in somewhere and they're not doing any good and they're making us worse and they're focusing on the disability, we need to be focusing on what people are able to do as well. I understand we have to use that disability for funding, but in that funding, make sure we say, okay, this is for them to work on the abilities of these clients to be successful members of our society. Because that is what I am today. I'm just like everyone in this room. And I guarantee you, walking by me in the hallway, you would have no clue that's who I've been, where I've been, and what I do. And I want to leave you with this caveat. I volunteer at Metro State University for their staff and faculty. I educate them on things and clues that they can do with people with disabilities who come into the classroom. Recently, people cry when I show the photos because I was really sick. And people cry, and this lady comes up to me, she goes, I can't talk about this because there's a HIPAA law. And I'm like, is it about me? Yeah. Okay, well, then you can talk. I have to sign a paper, blah, blah, blah. It was one of the case managers that was sent to my home before MCIL came into play. And she said to me, we wrote in your chart that you would die in that bedroom because there's nothing we could do for you. I'm not dead because they didn't let me die. And I think it's important, too, when we're looking at funding them, and we do fund them. We need to fund them. If I have to go on the news, we'll go on the news. But we also need to look at our staffing. When we got staffing that are there for us, and they care about us, but they're having to carry two or three jobs because the money is not what needs to be at for our staff to be working with us, we need to look at that as well. Because they're giving so much of their lives to care for us, we got to care for them as well. So thank you for taking the time to listen to me today. And like I said, this is extremely important to me. And like I said, I took time off my job and told Chief Harrington this was important. And you guys are important. And they are extremely important. So thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Representative Tice, do you have any other invited testifiers? Representative Tice?
What was that? I'm sorry.
Is that the completion of your presentation? Representative Tice.
I'm sorry. It's just really hard to hear you back here.
Yeah, it's the acoustics are poor here. So is that the completion of your presentation?
Yes, it is. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
This is a public hearing. Are there any other members of the public who wish to testify in favor or voice concerns with the bill? Seeing none, we'll close the public comment portion and move to member questions. Questions from the committee. Representative Metza.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Tice. I appreciate you bringing forward this bill, and I appreciate the work that this community has been doing. However, I do want to point out a few things. I recently, about 2 weeks ago on a Friday while I was home, met with about 30 families in my district who apply for these. And this is, I don't think we need to comment on it today, but one thing I would like to get some more information on is my understanding is that the counselors who meet with some of the folks who are applying for different jobs and placement have one-on-ones and some very non-verbally communicating have had better conversations with some of the counselors than their parents for the last 20 years. And one example would be a young gentleman who is in a wheelchair and was told essentially that he could work as a road flagger in my district for a construction firm. And the reality of that for the family, one was not there in terms of them feeling comfortable with their son being out on the road, and they had, the jurisdiction and guardianship still. And so I would just like to, moving forward, make sure that if this advice is getting given out by some of these counselors around the state, and I'm sure it's not just in my district that this is happening, that we're really having real conversations and the people are really getting the education they need to communicate this way. Because we had some pretty upset parents whose kids' hopes went through the roof. And I was pretty disappointed to hear those stories. And I know Senator Tomasoni was at this meeting, Senator Bach, and Representative Eklund. And so, again, not to criticize the program, but I do think this needs to get addressed at some point moving forward, and we do need to take a look so that we're not setting expectations for people and families that are unattainable in reality.
Ms. Roth?
Mr. Chair, members, thank you. Are you referring to vocational rehabilitation counselors working specifically on employment goals?
Representative Metzen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That would be my understanding of our meeting, yes.
Okay. And I just want to clarify, we do work in partnership with vocational rehabilitation and DEED specifically. We have a outstanding collaborative program right now in which we assist with the soft skills of employment for people to become employed. So we work in partnership with the voc rehab counselors, but our staff are not voc rehab counselors. They're independent living specialists who work on the independent living needs. And so that would probably be more directed towards vocational rehabilitation counselors, I believe, if I'm not confused.
And thank you, Mr. Chair. And, you know, I'd just say if in partnership, I'd appreciate you raising the concern as well, and I'm happy to meet with them individually and or set up meetings up in my district so they can hear from the families directly. But it's not to poke at anyone. You know, it's just hard to go into a meeting with a bunch of kids who want to go to work and doing really good stuff. ERDAC is the home in my district. And so, again, not to open up a can of worms here or anything, but I think it's something that needs to get talked about. And if we're in partnership with them, it's, I believe, our responsibility as a partner to address some of those concerns.
Members, before we vote, I just want to explain kind of a process thing here. So, you know, I think members were, I spoke with Representative Mahoney about this, that there's a little bit of surprise that we're voting on this and we're moving it forward. And I want to just kind of describe for the, everyone the chair's intent on this is that usually there's a reluctance by chairs to advance appropriation bills because eventually when they go to the House floor, regardless of the merits of the program, there's an appropriations bill on the floor. And people say, well, this is a good bill, but why can't we just make it better by offering an amendment to fund another program or add something to it? And so what the chair's intent with this is first of all, this is a bill that has both the Resource Inc. And the Centers for Independent Living has bicameral and bipartisan support. I'm aware of no organized opposition to it. The funding requests are modest and reasonable. But also, before we have a budget resolution, this gives us the opportunity as a committee to put items on the floor. House Rule 4.05 prevents additional expenditures from being offered. And so my intent with this and with other bills is that if there is bicameral and bipartisan agreement on something, there's a proven track record that we like, that we should be advancing some of those bills through the process individually as opposed to holding it up for the omnibus bill process or the minibus process, as someone taught me, for the end of session. Again, those ones have a proven track record. So that's the intent of this author, and I would the chair, and if members of the committee can work together in a bipartisan, collaborative way, if you're able to do those things, I would really encourage it. It certainly doesn't have to have it doesn't have to be with me, but it really is a way to empower the committee to establish relationships and work together so that when the omnibus bills process are going through in April and May, it's not the first time that we're working together. The majority party has to work with the minority party. That can either be House DFLers, it can be Senate DFLers, or it can be the governor's office. And my feeling is just very strong that as much as possible we should try to work together. So that's describing why we're doing this and to encourage members to be collaborative. Representative Tice, do you have any closing comments?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Sometimes it's hard to say anything afterwards because what you've heard is incredible and stories of ordinary people doing extraordinary things. And so I'm just very honored to be carrying this, and I hope I have all your support. Thank you.
With that, the chair renews his motion to have House File 369 as amended be recommended to pass and referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say nay. Motion prevails. You're on your way to Ways and Means. Thank you, Representative Tice. Representative Hamilton. Let's see. Representative Vogel moves that House File 527 be recommended to pass and referred to the Committee on Taxes. Representative Hamilton, do you have any author's amendments to the bill?
I do not.
Okay. Please proceed with your testimony.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I don't move as fast as I used to, so thank you. Mr. Chairman, basically what we're doing is we have these individual We have these individual wind towers out in across the state, but in particular the district in which I serve. And they're owned and operated by independent investors, in this case farmers. And what we're asking for is to clarify the classification around how they are being taxed. And there was a disagreement within the department on as far as the classification from a small scale to a medium-sized scale, even though nothing has changed with these wind towers. And I do have a couple constituents here that would like to testify, Mr. Chairman, and they can explain the issue at hand.
Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Mr. Chairman, my name is Marty Espenson. This is my wife, Patty. We live in Bingham Lake, a small little community between Windham and Mountain Lake. We live on our family farm. It's where my dad farmed, my grandpa farmed. Now I get the opportunity to. We have three boys. One's a first year in college. We got a ninth grader and we got a sixth grader. And I've greatly appreciated having the opportunity to work with my dad and my grandpa on the family farm, and my brothers who come out and help during spring and harvest time. And Patty and I were looking for a way to make sure that if our boys wanted the opportunity to stay on the farm, there'd be something there for them. So I suppose it's been 15 years ago or so, we stumbled across wind projects and started investigating into them, and got a hold of Dan Jewell and Jeffrey Paulson, and they helped us get a wind project together. There's 12 1.25 megawatt wind towers on our project. Patty and I are landowners for four of those turbines, and the rest of the turbines are on a neighbor's property, and there's 12 turbines and 12 separate families that are participating in them. So they're 1.25 megawatt machines, and which makes our nameplate capacity 15 megawatts. So to do these projects, it's quite in depth. It takes quite a bit of time. First thing you have to do is start with a MISO application. So we start with MISO. We try to get permission to enter the grid. That can take several years. In the time we're waiting for that, we need to find turbines. We need to find financing. We need to find equity. We need to get a PPA for somebody to buy the power. To make all this work, also there's a Minnesota state incentive that we are trying to qualify for. And to qualify for that, you need to be less than 2 megawatt turbine owner. So to make everything work better to the scale, the 12 LLC turbines, we share the substation. So we have 13 LLCs, one being a master substation, which is where the electricity is sold out of and the revenue comes into. From the substation, it gets paid out to each turbine individually how it produces. So that to make all this work, that Minnesota State Incentive was very important to get the financing and all that. The 12 turbines share an equity partner who gave us the equity to put the turbines up in exchange for the production tax credits. The production tax credits are something that ordinary individuals like Patty and I cannot use. They offset passive income, not ordinary income. So we have no appetite for those kind of tax credits. So that being said, the 12 turbines all have the same equity partner. Okay? So other than that, each turbine is individual. During construction, the construction costs are all different on each turbine. You know, the farther away you are from the substation, the more line you have to pay for, what have you. If you have a bad soil sample and the ground is sloughing while you're pouring the cement and it takes more cement, that project, that turbine, is responsible for those bills. So that being said, I don't know.
Chairman, my name is Patty Espenson, like you said, and
she's
I was hired by each of the individual turbines to do the administrative work, the day-to-day operations of the project. And A couple of years ago, we had gotten a notice from the Department of Revenue that they were looking at changing our nameplate capacity from the 1.25, and they wanted us combined, which with the 12 different turbines would be 15 megawatts. So that would push us from a small scale up to a large scale. Well, we had been getting the Minnesota incentive, and the Commissioner of Commerce at the time, Jeremy DeFebre, had went through all our records and said that we were considered small scale and that we qualified for that incentive. So what we didn't understand was why after, you know, 9 years of receiving it, why were they looking at making us combine nameplate? Because it didn't make sense then, because then we shouldn't qualify for that incentive. Well, so we had talked to our attorney who had helped us develop the project, and we contested it, and then they kind of put it on hold for a year. And then in November of this past year, we got another letter saying that they did want us to be combined and that we should start filing that. So that's why we're here today. We're looking for this legislative support to just help us remain a small scale, which we are. I have worked meticulously with our bank and with our accountants to keep everything separate. The revenue, like Marty said, that each turbine produces, that turbine gets its own revenue. That turbine gets its own expenses for operation and maintenance. So we have kept everything separate. So I guess, yes, we're just asking to remain a small scale.
Representative Hamilton, did you have any other testifiers?
No, Mr. Chairman, not unless there's additional questions. There are a few people out here that could ask if there's specific questions.
And just to explain to members why this is relevant, again, what happens is the taxes that are paid by wind power, they are progressive in nature. So the smaller the nameplate capacity, the lower the taxes are. And it's not a small amount. The difference between being a small scale a category and a large scale is a factor of 10. Talking about 10 times the taxes and nothing changed. So we're in this committee because of the energy components to it. Should the committee act favorably on this, it'll go to the tax committee and we'll have more in-depth conversation there. But for committee members, that's the reason why we're hearing this bill, is sort of the energy side of it. But this is a public hearing. Are there any other members of the public who wish to testify in favor or voice concerns of the bill? Seeing none, we'll close the public comment portion. We'll move to member questions. Representative Makeway.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Hamilton, I love this bill. It reminds me that democracy is a really good thing, that when there's an issue, people can go to their representative and make sure that rugs aren't being pulled out from under people. Huge supporter of this bill. I was down in Jeffers this weekend, actually, driving past some wind farms, and I was just wondering how many farms did this happen to, or how many folks did this affect?
That's either the testifiers or Representative Hamilton.
How many is in your group? Mr. Chairman, there's 12 turbines in our group. I think this is going to, our attorney Jeff Paulson is maybe knows more how many in Minnesota it's affecting, but it's a large number. There's East Ridge project by Chandler that has eight turbines. There's probably 135 turbines.
So the answer is too many.
Too many, yeah. And it's a big deal. We're in a tight time of our contract. We're done with the Minnesota State Incentive now, so that means we lost a cent and a half. And as you all know, that costs continue to escalate, and all this stuff was budgeted and bid 13 years ago. You know, our PPA don't go up as the expenses do. So we're in a tight time. And if we get taxed 10 times, it's probably the end of the project.
Representative Sundin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I like this bill. I plan on supporting it. But being the schemer that I am, if I had the capital to go about and reach out to probably 15 or 20 people and say, would you like to build a turbine? Would you like to build a turbine? Great, here, 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 and here, and divide this up. And it would actually be a large-scale thing on my behalf, but I'm actually setting up maybe a dozen or so false or shadow companies, whatever, just to avoid the taxes. Should we be looking out for something like that?
Representative Sundin, I think, I mean, I can go to Representative Hamilton here, but I think it's a reasonable question in terms of tax enforcement, but also compliance. It's just not the jurisdiction of this committee. So we're kind of looking at it from the reason why it's in the possession of this committee is because it's an energy issue. But I can certainly go to Representative Hamilton if you wish to elaborate.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Representative, I can understand where the concern comes in, and I think that'd be a good question to bring up in the tax committee as well to make sure everybody's in compliance. This particular case, like I said, the Espensons here, Marty, I know all the individuals that are individual owners of the towers, and so they are responsible for this, right? So, again, I think that can be addressed in the tax committee.
Representative Sundin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If I do win the lottery this weekend, I'll be looking for about a dozen of you.
Very good. Representative Mahoney.
The wheels on these chairs are need a little grease, I guess. Representative Hamilton, as I listened to the question from Representative McQuaid, when you answered it, I'm not sure if it's 130 windmills or what. It sounded like it was a guess. Is the 130 a guess, and do we need a clearer picture of how much energy would be taken off the grid if this bill isn't passed? And if you have that number or can get it to me, I would appreciate it.
Representative Hamilton.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. And Representative Mahoney, we are specifically talking about the project within the district that I serve. It was a guess on our part, but we do have the individual that can speak to that specific question.
Welcome to the committee, sir. Please state your name for the record and proceed to the testimony.
Mr. Chair, representatives, my name is Jeff Paulson. I'm actually the attorney that's worked with the Bingham Lake projects and several others in the state on this issue going back about 15 years. And to your question in particular, there are probably about 151 turbines around the state over the course of time that qualify for this lower level of production tax. Not all of those would have received the production incentive, but that gives you a sense of the scale of the overall program, of the type of locally owned turbines that are in existence in the state of Minnesota. Some of those are truly individually owned. They sit out in the middle of nowhere, and there's one owner, and they aren't at risk of being combined. But we do know of at least two or three other projects like this, totaling probably 40 turbines collectively, the 12 here and another 20 or 30 turbines that are affected particularly by this particular problem and by the department's approach to this particular tax issue.
Representative Mahoney.
So this is it's not going to affect 130 individual owners. It's more likely to affect 40-ish owners. Is that correct?
To the testifier.
Mr. Chair, Commissioner, Representative Mahoney, yes, that's true. At most, I would guess it probably would affect 40. I represent another 19. There probably are other projects that we're not aware of as we sit here today that would be affected that may not have voiced their concerns yet or may not have done it in this fashion.
Representative Mahoney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Hamilton, will your bill then cover any future windmills that this becomes an issue for, or is this just specifically to these 12 or 40?
The testifier?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Mahoney, it would cover the individuals that would fall underneath this same example across the state.
So, Mr.
Chair, it has the potential to get to the 130 maybe.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Mahoney, yes, whatever that number would be.
Thank you.
Representative Scott, then Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just wondering if we know why the Department of Commerce made this change, if anybody knows around the table or staff or...
I would. My opinion on the matter would be that that could be kind of like a tax enforcement and classification decision that the tax committee could certainly examine if they wanted to, but I don't know the answer to that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
The good news, Representative Scott, though, is that windmills or wind towers are getting bigger and larger, so I think this is probably going to be less relevant going forward. I don't think we're going to see too much of it. Representative Anderson.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. That was my question as well. If anybody from Commerce or Revenue is here, is this a ruling by Revenue to change this, or was it Commerce that is going to change this midstream.
Is there anyone from the Department of Commerce or Revenue who could testify? Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is John Kelly. I'm a government affairs liaison for the Department of Commerce, and unfortunately, I'm here in an observational capacity, but I can try to find out the answer and report back to the committee or the CA.
That'd be great. And if you could just share that with the committee legislative assistant, and then whatever answer we're given, we'll make sure to share with members of the committee. Thank you, Representative Scott and Representative Anderson. Any additional comments or questions? I do have a question for the which community did you two say you lived in?
Bingham Lake, Minnesota.
Kind of by Mountain Lake, Windham.
Either you two ever considered running for state representative?
Mr. Chairman.
I don't think we would fill his shoes as good.
He tried to get me to put a hog barn up years ago. I didn't do that either.
Can we vote on it first? Or? Representative Hamilton, did you have any closing comments before you hit me with your stick?
Well, I think that they make great representatives, so they'd have my support if they ran, just for the record. So, no, I appreciate all the kind words, appreciate the, hopefully the support, and thank you for hearing our bill.
And Representative Hamilton, my apologies. There is an A1 amendment. Does anyone wish to offer this amendment? Okay, then we won't. So, with that, the chair, Representative Vogel renews his motion to have House File 527 be recommended to pass and refer to the Committee on Taxes. All those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say nay. Motion prevails. You're on your way to taxes, Representative Hamilton.
Thank you,
Members,
Mr. Chairman.
Members, please our agenda for the day. Is there any closing comments? With that, we adjourn.